Chapter 14. Christmas and the Critter. The next morning, Charlie showed Granny Bent the rotten boards of the chicken coop that permitted him to get out and in. She didn't have the scalding words for him he half expected to get. She only looked critically at the old wood and said, "You'd best put in new ones today, or some animal that fancies hen meat or egg will get in pushing hard. There's plenty of 'em about." "Yes, ma'am, I will," Charlie said. He added, "Are you still going to lock me up when you go out bringing babies?" Old Jerusha shook her head and laughed. "There don't seem to be much cause to do that when you could have run off any time you wanted to, after you got fetched back here that one time." Charlie gapped at her. "You knew about that?" She was smiling at him. "I know everything that goes on here in the hills gets talked about. That's because there ain't ever much news. Everybody talked about how Jerusha's wool-headed outlander boy got hisself lost and had to be fetched home, else he'd never find his way back. They say you're quiet and hide your lack of brains by keeping still. Now, boy, fix them boards before you take water buckets to the corn." Angered at the insults, Charlie went to work with an axe to cut and shape boards to repair the hole. Then he took a hammer and nails to the boards he'd made. As he worked, he thought how different this was from delivering the hats Noreen had trimmed in New York City. His anger gradually faded away. Look what he could do with his hands in the few months he's been up here, when before he hadn't been able to do a single thing that needed doing on the farm. He was proud of what he could do. No Bowery boy could chop wood or hoe corn like he could, or fix leaks in a shingle roof. Any of them could deliver hats to fancy stores on Broadway. After he fixed the hole, Charlie stood back to admire it. He'd done a good job. He'd call Granny Bent to look at it. After all, it hadn't been her calling him wool-headed. It had probably been that old mountaineer who had caught him on the trail. In the weeks that followed, there was no mention by the mountain folk who came to the Bent farm that there had been any black Union Army soldier caught and killed, so Thad must have gotten away safely. For once, Charlie was happy that he didn't hear any war news. And except for that extraordinary visit, one day was very much like the one preceding it. Charlie found that the days grew timeless to him. Johnny's watch meant little here, though the boy kept it wound up and working. Time was marked off by getting up, doing chores, and going to bed, or by visitors coming to see Granny Bent. While he watered the growing corn and the little crop of cabbages, and later shucked the corn to the store in the crib and put the harvest cabbages in the loft, a steady trickle of mountaineers arrived on foot or muleback to consult with Granny Jerusha. They'd tell her, "I don't feel so pert, Granny," or "I feel weak and nervish," or "I'm worn out clear through," or "My legs keep poorly," and she'd give them a bottle of this yarb or a pinch of that. Sometimes they paid her with paper money printed by the Confederate government in Richmond, but mostly they gave her a jar of wild honey, a side of bacon, or a basket of blackberries, wild strawberries, or huckleberries. Charlie worked each day on the farm, and soon autumn arrived. It came in colors so bright they made his eyes ache to look at them. The orange of sassafras, the flaming scarlet of maples, the deep red of oaks, and the golden yellow of birch. The air was sharp and crisp to Charlie's way of thinking, very like the apples he picked, sliced, and laid on the roof of the cabin to dry for winter use. Jerusha Bent took him with her to Herne Hollow twice that fall. The first time they went to have her corn ground into meal at the grist mill, and to exchange yarbs for needles and thread, a length of red flannel cloth, some turpentine, and more kerosene for the lantern. Charlie didn't see Coy McRae there, or Sari either. Just two old men whittling on the store steps and letting the chips fall on their sleeping dogs. Nobody had any news of the war. The second time, Charlie, the old woman, and Canaan made the trip to the Hollow was weeks later to attend church again. Granny Bent had heard that a new circuit riding preacher was due, and she and Charlie went to hear him. A little balding man, this minister was a hell roarer. He shouted that devilment was everywhere, laziness was bred in the bone, and nobody ever drowned himself in sweat. With just about every other statement he made, people called out amen and nodded their heads. Charlie marveled at this sort of churchliness, so different from his own attendance at Mass, where each service was like another and he knew what to expect. Yet he had to agree with the circuit rider that there was devilment about and laziness aplenty in the world. He'd seen these things in the Bowery and hadn't had to come to the hills to learn it. All the same, the shouting and loud singing here embarrassed him a little, though he sensed the mountaineers were serious in their faith and surely seemed to have a good time in church. After the service and some baptizing in the nearby creek, the parish gathered around the minister. Because he rode about the hills, a circuit rider often had news to tell. Charlie walked up with Granny Bent just as someone asked, "What's happening with the war?" The minister folded his arms and said, "It's still a fightin'. The Yankees, cussed but be their name, have got our Virginia boys holed up at Petersburg in front of Richmond. In Georgia, the town Atlanta's been taken by the Bluebellies, and our men there have gotten away from Tennessee, I hear tell. There'll be a fightin' there before winter, too, I reckon." Charlie backed away. The fightin' was still going on. It pained him to hear of the war, but it would have pained him more not to know what was happening. By November, the glorious colors of the trees were gone. Leafless brown branches stood amid the dark strands of pine, cedar, and hemlock. Charlie heard wild geese and ducks flying over the mountaintops as he lay in the loft. The ladder was in its regular place even at night now, so he could climb down and go to the privy, or check on the hens if he heard noises in the night. Winter was coming, and with it there would be snow. It would cover the mountains, perhaps until the end of February, and would make the roads all but impassable. Few mountain people would climb to the farm unless led to by it by desperate trouble. Charlie had seen snow before in New York City, but there its clear whiteness was soon turned to brown slush by the feet of people and horses and wagon wheels. Here, when snow came, he found it made the mountains shining white, with the only notes of color the dark evergreens. When the sun shone on it, the snow sparkled in jewel-like tones that he'd seen only once before when he'd gone on an errand for a Bowery saloon owner to Tiffany's jewelry store. Here in the mountains, the 6th of January, Epiphany was Christmas Day, not December 25th. He didn't know why, and Granny Jusha couldn't tell him when he asked. To Charlie's way of thinking, this was a very strange Christmas. Granny Bent didn't seem to prepare for it at all. Because he was with her so much, he couldn't help but see that she wasn't knitting anything that could be a gift. His stockings were worn out now, and he could sure use a new pair, but she didn't knit even one for him, so he could hang it up on her chimney, as he had always done in New York. Well, all the same, she would get a gift from him, because he would whittle something he'd done to kill the time on street corners in the Bowery. He whittled her a red-grained wood whistle from a nice piece of wood he cut from a tree. The morning of January 6th, he gave it to her with the words, "This is a whistle. If you need me while I'm out gathering yarbs out in the woods with you, blow on it so I'll hear you. And you'll come to me, skedaddle?" "Yes'm, I'll come." "That you kindly for it." She looked steadily at him and then put the whistle into her shirt pocket. After that, Charlie volunteered. "On Christmas Day at home, we go to Mass and then give each other presents. After that, we go visiting people we know, and we always have a real fine Christmas dinner when we can afford to have one. Roast goose or roast beef?" "Do tell. All those going-ons in one day?" "Melindy would have liked hearing that about the goose. We don't fuss so much here in the hills, but we do eat a good supper, and we sing some, and outside of feeding the livestock, we don't do no work. I ain't got no gift for you, but I'll feed you fine today." Charlie had to admit that the highlight of the day was the dinner, the best he'd ever eaten here. A tender ham that he'd salted down the previous summer and now soaked in water, then baked, and a lard crust pie from sun-dried apples. After they finished eating, Granny Jerusha sang a mountain carol to Charlie in her harsh, deep old woman's voice. In turn, Charlie sang a carol in Latin, which the sisters had taught him. At its end, Granny Bent said, "You got a sweet voice." Then she went on to sing him another carol, the cherry tree carol. About the tree at the request of the baby Jesus let liquid flow off its bent branches to water the thirsty, kneeling animals at the manger. When she finished, she got up from her chair, took the long rifle down from its pegs above the mantel, and gave it to Charlie. She said, "There's one more thing we just got to do now. I'll take the pistol and shoot her off, and you'll fire this old gun of Isaac's pa." "Why?" asked Charlie. "It's something we always do on Christmas Day. I forgot to do New Year's Eve like I should have. I don't know why hill folks do. Maybe it's to scare off bad spirits that could be around, maybe not." Charlie stared at the huge rifle. It was almost as tall as he was. Could he even get it to his shoulder? Would it explode when he fired it, or kick him back harder than Canaan could? He feared the huge antique, but did not want to let on to Granny Bent. He surely didn't want to be called a coward boy again. Thank heaven he didn't need to aim it, just fire it. Outside in the glistening sunset, Granny Bent fired her old pistol into the air, sending a flock of crows flapping out of her apple tree. Knowing it was his turn, Charlie put the rifle to his shoulder with difficulty, said a prayer to the Virgin Mary, found the trigger, closed his eyes, and pulled. Bang! When he opened his eyes to the smell of gunpowder and the sound of Jerusha Bent's laughter, he realized that he had been knocked over onto his back from the recoil. "You done it, Charlie. I knew you could. When we get back inside, I'll show you how to clean and load it again in case you ever need to use it." "Do you think I'll need to?" Charlie asked ruefully as he got up, brushed snow off his shirt and trousers, and then picked up the long rifle. You might. There could be bandits come here because there's nobody to rob on the roads now. Or there could be critters. Critters? Animals. Wild ones. Hungry, too. Bears? The old woman shook her head. No, bears sleep out the winter and come out in the springtime. Painters, that's what I mean. There's one that comes here the last two winters. Folks call it Old Wryfoot because he's got a twisted paw. It's a her. Somebody spied her with cubs one time. Charlie thought of the mountain animals he'd seen over the months. Deer, elk, wildcats, bear, raccoons, possums, rabbits, and foxes. Had he seen a painter, too? What does a painter look like? Like a big yeller cat. Lots bigger than a wildcat. Longer than you are, Charlie. You don't generally see 'em, but you can hear 'em. They let out a yell like a person scared to death. Like a human screaming? Charlie thought back to two nights before. Yes, he'd heard a cry like that while he lay in his loft half asleep. He had thought it was some winter bird he didn't know. The cry had sounded like a small child, scared and lost. He'd listened for it to come again, but it had not. A big yellow cat? Now he recalled seeing a big yellow animal pacing in a cage at Barnum's show last year. The sign over it had said mountain lion, puma, or panther. Panther? Was painter mountain talk for panther? He supposed it was. Wading through drifts behind her, careful not to let the long rifle drag in the snow, Charlie came back to the cabin and set the old weapon on the table to watch its reloading. It surely was a powerful piece, he figured. He looked at it in distaste, though, recalling how he delighted in the many shooting galleries of the Bowery. After the Battle of the Wilderness, he didn't want any more shootings. The face of the Confederate he shot with Jem Miller's musket rose up over and over again to haunt him. It was like a scene from a play at Niblo's Theater, except that it was played over and over in his head, not only during the day, but at night in the evil dreams that tormented him. "Watch me now, Charlie," ordered Jerusha Bent as she got the hanging powder horn, a box of cloth patches from the mantel, and the ramrod beside the fireplace. "I got to put in the gunpowder, you see." Suddenly Charlie noticed something. She was using his name now, not boy. Granny Bent had given him a Christmas present after all. He slept well that night, dreamlessly for a change, until the early hours. Then suddenly he was awakened by the sound of honking, followed by an unearthly cry. The sounds came from somewhere nearby. He sat bolt upright in his quilt, his heart thudding. From below he heard Jerusha's voice. "That's the painter I told you about. She's come back, and Melindy knows she's here. Don't fret over Melindy. That goose is smart enough to fly out of her way. "What does the painter want?" "Anything livin' she can eat. Don't fret over them hens, neither. You fixed up the hen house good. There ain't no call to get up. The critter can't get in, and she'll be gone before sunrise. You'll see her tracks in the mornin', and they'll be big ones, too. I seen 'em last year. Because she's wry-footed, she probably don't hunt so good, so she come around people's cabins to see what she can get easy-like." Though Charlie lay down again, he could not sleep. When the next wail sounded, he sensed the panther was at the very edge of the cornfield, and that wasn't far from the house.